Down to business on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by American financier and former White House Director of Communications, Anthony Scaramucci. Anthony, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Anthony, maybe we could start at the beginning. You're an Italian-American from Long Island, went to Harvard, and became an investment banker. Did you have a typical American childhood where you were told that if you work hard, you'll do well? Tell us a little bit about your early days.
Well, that was definitely part of it. I mean, remember, I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and so the country was very different back then. Blue-collar people had really high wages. My dad was a crane operator, and so he spent 42 years at the same company mining sand out here on Long Island. And they were good enough wages to put us in a, you know, middle-ish class home. And he really believed that and instilled that in me. Today, that very same job, if you have that job, you're down 24% in terms of your purchasing power. So it's become harder for people. But when I was a kid, you know, my parents were like, go to school and you're going to live the American dream. And so the goal now is to try to help other people do the same thing.
Okay. We'll talk about Skybridge Capital in a minute, but what was your actual route to the White House, Anthony? How did you end up with working for Donald Trump for that famous 11 days? What route did you take?
It was obviously improbable that he was going to win the presidency. We'll start there. But I was, when I got out of school, I didn't have a network. You know, some people call it an old boys network or whatever the aristocracy is. I obviously wasn't part of it, having grown up in a blue collar neighborhood. So one entree into that world is through the world of politics. So I started writing checks when I was 25 years old to political figures. My first check was actually to Rudy Giuliani when he ran unsuccessfully for mayor in 1989. But those checks were good investments for me because it opened up the world that I really didn't have access to. And I started meeting some very high profile and wealthy people around the country. I was able to build my business off of the back of that network. And so I really was, to put it plainly, I was at the Garden Variety Republican Party fundraiser. Right. And so when I went to go work for Donald Trump, he was round three for me. I started with Governor Scott Walker, and then I was with Jeb Bush prior to working for Donald Trump. So he wasn't my first or second choice. He became the party's choice. And so I went to go work for him. And then, you know, it's a famous story at this point, but let's face it, once he won the presidency and he wanted me to go work for him in the White House, I let my ego do the talking. I got my pride involved, even though my wife and others said, look, the guy's not well psychologically, not a good fit, you and him. I went to go work for him. And obviously it ended with me getting ejected from the White House, blown into Pennsylvania Avenue 11 days later. But truth be told, it was a great experience, humbling. Yeah. And I'm glad I did it. I mean, I think I'm better for it. I think I'm a wiser person and sort of more humble.
You once joked that a Scaramucci has become a unit of time, that time being, what was it, 10 or 11 days?
Yeah, you know, and I put out on Twitter last week that Trump's new blog lasted 2.63 Scaramucci's, sort of become the official scorer of that that time measurement.
Right. And we'll move off this in a second, but you were fired for an off-the-cuff remark about Steve Bannon that you made to a reporter that you trusted. You obviously regret that, do you?
Regret it? No, I actually don't regret it because I think the firing probably saved my business career, probably saved my marriage. You know, had I worked any longer for Donald Trump, I think I would have had almost like orange Cheeto stains that I couldn't remove. So regretted, no. I mean, was it a stupid thing to do? Absolutely stupid. So from that point of view, But I did trust the guy. His father had worked on the same construction site as my old man did for 50 years. They'd known each other since 1967. And so I didn't expect that from him. He was a fellow Italian American from my neighborhood. But, you know, c'est la vie. Remember this, though. I never once blamed anybody for my firing, not President Trump or General Kelly. I'm accountable for that mistake. But I don't regret it because I have to tell you, the way Trump handled the presidency and the stress he caused to the people around him that were trying to help him, whether it was General Kelly, General Mattis, General McMaster, any of the people that were on his staff that had any normal set of American values and morals. No, I don't regret it, okay. Actually, in hindsight.
And are you glad then that he didn't get reelected? And what do you make of Biden's tenure so far?
Well, he's a fellow Irishman, no? I mean,
He loves us.
Yeah. I get along great with the Irish. My first wife was a Lenihan. So, you know, second wife was what? Let me just put it this way. My second wife wasn't a Lenihan, but my first wife was. But in all seriousness, of course I get along with the Irish. But Joe, Vice President. The president now, President Biden, is a great, great guy. I've worked with him on a lot of different issues when he was vice president. He's doing a good job. I think there's things about the job. I'm a Republican, although the Republican Party has been disfigured by this personality cult known as Trumpism. So I'm probably a little bit more business-minded, a little bit more practical. But having said that, I love what he's doing on the vaccines. And I think this is going to get the economy open faster. And so I praise him. I think he's by and large doing a good job, as evidenced by his 61% approval rate.
Yeah. And when we look at American politics now, Anthony, it seems incredibly divided between the red and blue states. Is it actually getting worse? Or what do you think that could be, you know, what could bring greater harmony to the United States?
Well, we need transformative post-partisan leadership. We need somebody that is going to break out of the tribal boundaries that these politicians have put on themselves and speak for the nation and create more unity. I think that is the unfortunate time capsule that we're living in right now. Remember, after the Second World War, whether you were Democrat or Republican, you were united on trying to solve the post-World War II dilemma, the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And so people were getting on better. Now, without those existential threats and the fragmentation of the family, the fragmentation of the media, we've become very tribal. And so, yes, I think it's gotten worse. And then, of course, you get politicians like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or Josh Hawley, where, you know, they want to disavow the democracy. They want to take away voting rights from people, or at least make it more restrictive. And it's sort of it's a statement of hypocrisy because, you know, the democracy works for me if I'm winning, but if I'm not winning, of course, let's resort to fascism. So I find that disgusting and I find that very anti-American. And so for me, this isn't about left or right at this point, it's about right or wrong. So I'm happy to speak out about it. I'm happy to challenge those people. Because, you know, we have to transform the country and we have to unify the country. And you can't unify the country with that sort of nonsense, you know, talking about things like white replacement theory or critical race theory, all this sort of stuff. You know, we're one country. What Lincoln said about the country was the last best hope for mankind. And we have to make it that. And so you need transformative leadership. This reactionary leadership is not going to get us there.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your business, Anthony, Skybridge Capital. What does the company actually do?
Well, you know, I've been a financial advisor since I left Harvard Law School 32 years ago. I started this company 16 years ago. So less my 11-day disaster in the White House, I've been the founder and managing partner at Skybridge. We've got about $9 billion under management, and we advise families and institutions on how to allocate money into the hedge fund space and private equity. And so it's been a successful business. I also run a think tank called SALT, SALT, where we do conferences, and we've done 14 of those, 10 in North America, three in Asia, including Singapore and Tokyo, and one out in Abu Dhabi. So all that stuff's on our website, skybridge.com. But it's been a fun business. It's a lot more fun than politics, my brother. A lot more fun than politics.
I wanted to ask you about Bitcoin, because you've said that you think that Bitcoin is a retirement asset, and you've put your money where your mouth is. So tell me about your thoughts about Bitcoin, Anthony. And again, when we look at the valuations, where they've come from, it still spooks a lot of people, though.
Yes, and remember, when I talk about this, this is a 1 to 5% allocation for people, 1 to 3% for cautious people. For super cautious people, it would be 1%. But I would say that you're at risk if you're at 0%, because Bitcoin is going to transform the way financial services and transactions are done in the future. It's going to expedite the digitization of fiat currencies. And it's slowly eclipsing gold as a uniform standard of value. And so the best that I would say to your listeners is read Dominic Frisby. He's a UK journalist. Read his book, Bitcoin, the Future of Money. It's a very good primer on what is going on in that community. Don't have enough time on a radio show to explain the whole thing, but here's what I would say. If we're right and Bitcoin becomes this digital technological store of value akin to gold, it's got a big run ahead of itself. And if we're right that it becomes part of your phone in terms of your smart wallet, which you'll eventually have, and you'll be transferring between different currencies, whether it's the euro or the British pound or the US dollar, and you'll be flipping back and forth between that and Bitcoin, you're going to want to own Bitcoin here, as it's still in its very early, very nascent early adoption stage. So, that's my theory on that. And
behind it, or the criminal element, or any of that stuff doesn't bother you.
Well, I think a lot of that stuff is completely overstated. I don't see Bitcoin as a criminal asset. In fact, what you find with Bitcoin, it's very easy to track, despite the misnomers that people are saying about it. You know, Janet Yellen, the Secretary of Treasury, made that statement, but it was refuted by the former CIA director, Mike Morrell. He put out a white paper explaining that, my wallet, where I own my Bitcoin, is totally available to be seen on the web. And so why go to transact the coins coming out of my wallet? If they're entering your wallet, everybody, all the miners, all the people that are checking that ledger can see that transfer. So, I think that's a misnomer. Was it used? Did it start that way? Yes. Did the internet start primarily with porn videos? Yes, it did. No question about that. But look at what it's transformed itself into over the last 25 years. Bitcoin is 12 years old. It's got a $700 billion U.S. market cap. It reached a trillion 2 months ago. It's the fastest to $1 trillion of anything, faster than Amazon, faster than Google. And I think it would be a mistake not to at least try to understand it. To be afraid of it would also be a mistake. So with knowledge and information and more research comes greater comfort. I spent 3 years researching Bitcoin before I made the decision to be a part of it,
Okay.
So that's my story.
Again, I come from a place that I only invest in things that I understand. And at the moment, I haven't done that research. So we'll come back to that another
start with
day.
Start with Dominic's book. The reason I like Dominic Frisby's book so much is that it was written in 2014. He predicted the last 7 years of the Bitcoin evolution. And I think he has a really good sense for where things are going and why some of the other cryptocurrencies prior to Bitcoin failed and why Bitcoin has been so successful.
Okay. So, Anthony, finally, I wanted to ask you then, are you done with politics, or do you think you might get involved again?
Well, I'm stupid enough to get involved again, you know, definitely stupid enough. So, you know, no is the answer. And, if, you know, Donald Trump, apparently there's some talk about him running again. Well, if that's the case, I will be very, very active in defense of the country against his false patriotism. So we'll have to see what happens. But I love my business. I'm more designed to be an entrepreneur than a politician because I'm not the backstabber that these politicians are. As I said to the BBC when I was in the White House, I'm more of a front stabber. So if Trump's going to run again, I'll be out there swinging very hard at the guy.
Okay. Well, listen, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us, Anthony Scaramucci. Real pleasure to catch up with you today. Thank you.
Great to be on. Thank you, sir.